Hello, I'm Joanna North. I'm a psychotherapist and psychologist. Welcome to my MindKind podcast.
This is Jo North, and I'm delighted today to be talking with one of the people, one of the women in our Adults Affected by Adoption group, which we run every month at Joanna North Associates. Millie, who is a really, really stalwart member of our group and very, very strong woman. And so we're delighted to talk with her. And she's going to talk today, there's an awful lot she can talk to us about, but today she's going to talk about birth records and how she has tried to find them. And it's complicated, but we do like stories. And Millie, thank you so much for talking with us. Where does this start? Where do you want to start on this journey?
I suppose if we're looking at this search for birth records, that would start in the 1990s. I'm actually born in the 1960s. But after being adopted and growing up, I grew up in Wales. I moved to London and I wanted to maybe find out more information about my birth mother. I already had information about my birth father, but I felt that I needed more information about why I had been given up for adoption, because of the story that had been told and had been almost part of who I had come to be. And that was, I'd been told I was given up for adoption because of racial issues. I'm a woman of mixed heritage, with the mother being white and the father being black. And I'd been told from a very early age that the reason I'd been given up for adoption was because I was black. And I thought, actually, I need to know the truth. And I felt I'd got to that age where I could actually cope with the truth. And that was in the 1990s.
Yeah. It has to be said that it's a fairly questionable thing to say to anybody that they'd be given up because they're black, you know.
Absolutely.
Nobody would be told they were being given up because they got blonde hair. Yeah. So that clearly wasn't the reason for you being put up for adoption. But I dare say in the 60s that there was something going on about race, and I know that's part of the story that you want to tell. So you're of mixed heritage. I think your adopted family were white, were they?
That's right, yeah.
So that was a complicated picture for a child, you must have been very curious, or at least even sometimes very upset. How was that?
Yes, I was. I grew up in a Welsh mining community, and in a place where you never saw black or brown people unless you went to the Indian takeaway or the Chinese takeaway. And that was it. And when I was in school, there were no other people of colour at the school for most of my education. It was very different. It was very difficult on times because there was racism going on. And God bless my adopted parents. They did their best to cope with what was being thrown at them, whether that be neighbours or, you know, people generally when they would go out with me. I mean, I've got to say, it's not like that today, but that was what was happening at that time, in those times, you know. It was very different.
I think that we must talk to you at length about your identity and your heritage, but we always talk with adopted people at length about their sense of identity, which is a cocktail that needs to be understood, doesn't it? And I'd love to talk to you more about that, but we thought we'd focus today on your decision to search. And so tell us at what stage you or what age were you, and what did you do, and what steps did you take?
I must have been around about 30. And lots of people used to ask me questions about, did I know who my birth mother and father were? And I'd always say, well, I know who my birth father was, didn't know anything about my birth mother. And I would often say, well, I'm not interested to find out anything because, you know, I'd go, because of these reasons, I don't want to find out anything. And I got to that point and I thought, actually, yeah, I want to know the truth of the matter, and decided to start the search. Because people kept asking me lots of questions. Do you know who she is? Do you know what happened? And I could only go on hearsay and what I'd grown up with. And I thought, let's get to the bottom of this. And that's when I started this search. I felt quite seriously. And I was, when I say seriously, today I know what seriously actually means when you really start to search. But at that time I would be going, well, I think they lived here and I think that was happening. And I try and do a little bit of digging for myself, not very successfully, but I tried.
Yeah, it's very easy to not, you need to rely on facts.
Yes.
In this search, don't you? And so how did you go about digging up facts? And we do meet a lot of people, who have feelings and imaginations and memories and thoughts, and these are all very valid parts of people's processes, but the deal is that it's solid facts that are gonna bind that person. So
yeah, absolutely. I spoke with my adopted mum and I said, do you have my file? I thought there must have been a file. She told me that I had been made a ward of court. I've discovered since then I wasn't a ward of court, but I was, I can't remember what the phrase is, but I was like a protected child. That's right, because of the complex issues around the adoption. So I said to her, well, there must be a file. Do you have a file? And she said, no. So I said, well, can you tell me what you do know? What are the facts? What do you do know? And she started to give me little bits of information that the adoption had gone through one of the local county courts, where she thought the birth mother had moved to. And then that's when I thought, right, I'm going to go to that local court, which was in South Wales, spoke with them and didn't get very far with it, really, because they said all the papers over the years had been moved. So, the files weren't available there.
Okay. Well, let's again deal in facts. The fact is that adopted people do have a right to their records. And that's a fact. And we know, because at JNA, we spend a lot of time doing that. We do a birth records service for our clients. So what seems to be difficult is that we hear a lot of stories about people not being able to grasp their records. And I think your story isn't different from that. Tell us, at what point did you think this was going to be too hard?
Oh my goodness, maybe the mid-90s. Over the years, I picked up and put down this issue, because you get so far and it feels too hard. You definitely need somebody to work with, and you need a support network with you, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because if you try to do it alone, and I was alone most of the time, I had a little girl at the time, it was just, it was a big task. And there are times where you just go, I need to breathe, I need to put this down. Whereas if you were working with a support worker in some way, you'd feel like you could go forward.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's like being lost in the forest. Nobody can lead you out unless somebody knows the pathway.
That's right. And it felt like, sometimes I felt like I was going forward, but a block would be put in the way. So if we kind of, I'll skip through the 90s, because it was on and off that I decided to search for her, and it seemed too difficult a task. And maybe go to about the year 2000, somewhere around.
So how many years is that so far? That's how many years that we've skipped here.
7 years.
Okay, so 7 years you were bitting and batting, and things were, pieces of paper going forth, and you actually got nowhere. You got nowhere. Had you established who the local authority were who managed the adoption?
No. Yes, okay. And no.
Yes,
because I was told it was I was told that the court that everything happened through was Blackwood, but Blackwood documents got moved to Newport. Newport was saying that it was Caerphilly, and nobody was owning who was doing what, basically.
Okay.
So yeah, we got to around about the year 2000. Is it 2000? Yeah.
Yes.
Year 2000. Yeah. So there's a song you see playing in my head. I thought, right, I'm going to give it another go. At the same time, I also decided to think, okay, I've been through this journey, as horrible as some of the things that can happen as an adopted person, and I don't want somebody else to experience what I'd gone through. So I went forward for panel to be an adopter and also a foster carer. That's a whole other story, so we won't go there today. I'm not an adopter. But whilst I was on that journey, I thought I need to understand my story if I'm going to be able to help a child understand their story, bearing in mind things have changed dramatically for adoptees, and they are given information now, aren't they? It's very different, I think, from before 1975 when things changed.
Yeah.
You just didn't get information, basically.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss future episodes. And if you can rate the podcast in your podcast app, that will help spread the word and help more parents.
And as I was at that point living in Bedfordshire, I spoke with a social worker in Bedfordshire, and they said they would help me find my file. And they weren't able to get it either. By this point, I don't know who they were. They were just contacting who I said I thought had the file. Can you contact Newport? Can you contact Caerphilly? And they did that. But they also didn't get a file, but they did get a response. And that initial response was, there is no file, but there is a letter on file from your birth father saying that he had owed like 10 and sixpence, something like that. And he was paying money that he had owed for my upkeep whilst I was fostered. And they said that was the only thing, there was nothing else available.
So there was no file, but there was a file with one letter on it about owing 10 and sixpence.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
What did you make of that?
Well, I didn't know what was true. That could be true, because they said that was it. Somewhere, I don't know what year it was, I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. There must be more information. And I even thought, I'm going to go to the European Courts of Human Rights, because I am entitled to know who I am.
Exactly. Thank you. Good. Thanks for getting that one in.
But I spoke with, is it BAF? BAF at the time?
Yeah.
I had a chat with them, and they said, well, you know your name, you know where you were born, and that's all that you're entitled to. You don't need to know any other information. Again, I suppose these days, you know, you'd get a different response, but we are going back a long time. So
yes. Well, that's very gracious of you. But so in this day and age, people will know their story by the time they have their file. So you've been at this a long time. Mm-hmm. And did it ever feel that people were avoiding the issue? Or were you just thinking, oh well, maybe I just didn't only had one piece of paper, you know? Where were you?
I didn't believe that. I thought there must be more to this story. Based on things that my mum had told me, my adopted mum, as I was growing up, I thought there has to be more than one piece of paper that would say this. Mm. Has to be. Mm. It didn't make any sense. If it went through all the fight that she went through to adopt me and it went to court, there's no way that there could only be one piece of paper, I thought. Yeah. So yeah. I felt that people were, I didn't understand why, but I felt that people were holding information back.
Okay, so what, looking at this now, what have you found, Millie? What have you found about this file? Have you got hold of this file now? Because everybody sitting and listening to this is going to be deeply frustrated.
What happened there? Absolutely.
What happened? We all want to know.
What happened next? So, fast forward another 16 years.
Oh, no, not 16 years. We've already done seven. Years. Please don't say that. No, so 17, 18, 19, 21, 23 years now we're talking in total.
And I'd done another, I thought I'd got quite far down the road. I'd moved back to Wales. And I was at that point, 2008, working with Swansea Social Services, Adoption Services. They weren't able to get any information for me. Right. So go all the way forward to 2016, 2017. I was chatting to a friend who just said, what's your story? Mm. I didn't know that she was a member of Southwest Adoption Services. And I told her about how frustrating it had been that I hadn't got anywhere. And she said to me, do you know what? You must not stop. Keep going and speak to Southwest Devon Adoption Services, because they'll help you. So I wrote to them and I started to have some conversations about where I felt the file was, what could have potentially happened. And they got in touch with, I'm not sure if it was Newport or Southeast Wales. And they were told point blankly, there was no file. There's nothing on file for me. And there was nothing they could do to help.
Okay.
So Devon put it all down and said, there's nothing we can do further. So I started to do more digging for myself and got somebody who's involved with sort of heritage, you know, finding out, I can't remember what they call, but you see them online and this lady sort of searches for families and things like that. Mm. And she was able to go off and find out lots of information going back, centuries to my family, but she couldn't get any further than when I was born. So I just put it down again. Interestingly, though, she had come up with names of my birth mother and potentially marriages. So there was this woman's name and different people's marriages. And I started to get all the marriage certificates. I wouldn't recommend any of this to anybody because it's heartbreaking. Every time you get a birth certificate and a marriage certificate, it's just heartbreaking when you realise that's not the person that you were looking for. But being a glutton for punishment, I did do that several times. And then I stopped again. And that would have been 2019 by this point, 2019.
Okay.
And I picked things up by chance in April. I'd gone on a retreat with women of mixed heritage, and there was somebody else there who had been adopted, and she had a story, and she'd found her file, an unconventional way, but she'd found her file, and she gave me an email address and a telephone number for someone to contact, which I did, and sent over my birth details and the details of my birth mother. And within 24 hours, she was able to come back and say to me, you need to sit down, I found her. And I was just like, okay. I was quite shocked. And then the next sentence she said was, but unfortunately she died. And she died on Christmas Day 2020. I was absolutely shook to my core because I had searched for so long to try and find this person, and now I found her. She was no longer living, and you know, we were beside ourselves, myself and my daughter. And I thought to myself, "Oh, go on, sorry, Joe."
No, I'm just taking a breath because I'm just thinking this is 20, 25 years of searching, and someone at the press of a button located her. And I am literally trying to deal with the upset of that. I mean, that must have been dreadful. And you missed her. I mean, what was that? That was COVID year, wasn't it? Was it?
It was, yeah. She had health conditions and she was in a care home. I'll explain those little bits now. So when I got that news on the Sunday, I thought, right, now what am I going to do? Shall I just put it down? Or is there more to this? Because by this point, I still didn't have any file. I still didn't know the truth of the matter. So I decided to investigate what had happened, how she died, what had happened next. So I contacted the local authority to find out about, you know, births, deaths, marriages, and so on. They told me which care home she'd been in, contacted the care home. They told me what had happened with regards to her passing away, and which crematorium it was. I then contacted a crematorium and asked about this person, and they said, yes, we did do the cremation. I was like, okay. I suppose one of the things in my mind was, she was in a care home. Was she on her own? Was she poor? Were people looking after her? What was happening, you know, for it to be in that situation? Anyway, the people at the crematorium, I explained who I was, and I said, was there somebody looking after her affairs? And they said yes. And I said, if I send you my email details, will you pass that on to the person? And they did. And then I got an email back within 24 hours from my birth mother's stepdaughter. And I mean, there's so many surprises and oh my God issues with this. Mm. And she said, actually, she never stopped looking for you. From that age group, a lot of women, I suppose, that had put their children up for adoption thought that they couldn't search for that child. That's the end of it. The adoption happens, and then it's up to the child at the age of 18 if they want to search for that person. Mm-hmm. So she'd never gone past that point of thinking, well, I'll go and look for her. Mm-hmm. But what she had done, thinking she was doing the right thing, was write to the local authority that had organised the adoption. And she wrote to them in 1993 with a letter saying, I had a child, she was put up for adoption, and I just want to get in contact with her. If she ever contacts you, please give her my contact details because I want to know where she is. And that was in 1993.
Okay.
And I've seen
it's
that letter.
It's another, you've seen that letter. So was that on file with the letter? apparently the one letter with about 10 shillings owing. You know, I'm just, it's another take a deep breath moment, isn't it? Because here's the, it's like a Greek tragedy here of your search and her search, and it just never came off. And it never came off. Let's name it, Millie. It never came off. Because nobody would put their hands on that file. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got a little bit of time left, right? And yeah. I think obviously we're going to take up this story again because it's, you know, it's worthy of her memory and your, you know, your identity and your being in the world. It's really worth a lot of attention. But I wonder if you can wind up our podcast today by letting us know, did you get your hands on that file? And did anyone give you any explanation? And where are you up to with that? Bearing in mind your life, you know, your 25 year search.
Yeah. Because of me getting that letter, which was sent by her stepdaughter, I had it on email. It gave me another wind to go back to the adoption services and say, you told me there was nothing. You've told me that there was one letter. I now know that this letter exists because your stamp is on it. Where is my file?
Yes, good.
And because that happened, all of a sudden, either the rules have changed, could be a mixture, rules have changed, I had evidence. Within days, they'd said, we found your file. And they were going to get my file to Devon Adoption Services, you know. Which they did.
And what were Devon going to do with that then? Were they going to give you, you're supposed to have some counselling, aren't you, on your phone?
Yeah, I didn't get any counselling. What happened was I heard from someone within Newport, and she explained to me that a lot of my file had been redacted. It's a big file, there's over 300 pages in it, but a lot of information had been redacted. And they sent all of that to Devon. And I did have a social worker allocated, and they met up with me once to go through the file. It was just such a big file to go through, and I was left kind of, I don't know, reeling. I can't explain these emotions that were circling. I didn't know what to do with it. And I did ask if there was counselling, and they said no, there was nothing available for me. And I have to say, at the same time, I obviously found out about yourselves, Joe, and I thought, well, I have to get counselling. I need someone to do this work with me. And obviously I chatted with yourself, but it's given me a strength, really, to speak with the social services, because they've acknowledged that I do need to have someone support me whilst I go through the file. But if I do want counselling, then that's down to me. And it's very sad that I'll have to pay for all of that. But that's my choice if I choose to do that. But yes, it's the system that have messed up. So why, if the system has messed up, why should they be allowed to continue to mess up someone's life?
Absolutely. And I think that is the question we need to end with, and say, you know, you did not get your file. You searched, you missed your mother missed you. That is a human tragedy. And, you know, who is responsible for getting you your files, to which you had a right? And you did come to JNA, and you did talk to us, and we're delighted to be thinking with you and working with you. And this podcast is really part of saying to people, this does still happen. We have all sorts of reasons why people don't get files. And as you know, we've done a lot of work with University of East Anglia and the Department for Education. We did a piece of research saying people aren't getting their files. It is causing harm. And we, you know, we object. So, Millie, the first quarter of your story is about this file, and I'm really looking forward to the next pieces. And last words from you: what would you say to anyone searching? And if they got no for an answer, what would you say?
Keep going, but make sure you've got support. Don't try and do this all on your own.
Be
resilient and know that you have a right. You have a right to your identity, and who you are in the world is very important.
It is. Absolutely. And that's why the legislation is in place. And just to say at JNA, we've just this month, we've set up, and we do searches and we do the intermediary work, but we've just set up a birth records retrieval service with a counselling service attached to it, because we seem to be quite strong on getting hold of records for people. And so anyone hearing this that wants to come to us would be delighted to help them. Millie, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. We will continue to discuss this and other topics related to child mental health. So make sure you subscribe, and if you have any questions for future episodes, please email me. There is a link in the podcast description.